The Athletic.
Castagna has got in behind Townsend, and Jamie Vardy puts Leicester City in front. Fofana, Evans and Soyuncu all set to make their move. And it's Johnny Evans who mops up. Still with Vardy. Iheanacho. Yet another for Kelechi Iheanacho.
Hello and welcome to 5000 to 1, the Leicester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm Rob Tanner. Joining me as always, a man who was part of a Foxes side that were taken to Olympiacos for a pre-season friendly, only to be greeted by 20,000 mad Greeks spitting and swearing, waving banners about Satan and the devil. That's a quote. And it's Leicester City legend, Matt Elliott. Matt, how are you?
Yes, very good, Rob.
Did you say that then? 20,000 mad Greeks spitting and swearing at you, waving banners about Satan and the devil?
Yeah, it was pretty much like that. I'm not sure there was quite 20,000. There was, it felt like it, but yeah, really hostile place when you go over there. We're thinking it's a nice little friendly pre-season trip, and we played Olympiacos and AEK Athens in a three-way tournament over the course of, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, whatever it was. And yeah, I mean, welcome to hell banners were up there at Olympiacos. We were getting things thrown at us and spat at us, and it was quite
friendly.
Comical. Yeah, exactly. They didn't care. They're up for it, that's for sure. And half our team didn't even go out for the warm-up. They didn't fancy it.
But what were the players like? What was the opposition like? Were they up for it as well?
It had an edge to it, for sure. They weren't quite as hostile as the supporters were, but they were up to all the old tricks, you know, trying to wind you up and grab you and pinch you and everything, and feigning injury. It was quite a contest, really, for a pre-season game, and it got quite feisty. I can't actually remember the result on the back of it. I think we settled for a 2-1 defeat. We didn't want to upset the locals.
As long as you got out alive.
Yeah, exactly. All's well that ends well. And that trip was famous in my mind for one of the best nights out ever that I've had, with courtesy of Theo Zagorakis. I think I've mentioned it before on another show, but won't go into details, but it involved red carpets, white leather settees, VIP cordons, Greek dancing, flower throwing, smashing of plates, unfortunately glasses and bottles as well, and a standoff with the local bodybuilders. But we all ended up serenely asleep and waking up back in Blighty, safe and sound. So it was a trip to remember, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we've got loads to talk about in this edition of 5000 to 1. Obviously, everything's happened this week. It's been a crazy week. Starting at Wembley, you and I were both there to see Leicester City reach the first FA Cup final 52 years. We're going to get to that. We're going to talk about what was going on whilst that game was being played out. We were hearing all these rumours about the European Super League and how Leicester City have influenced that. We'll get into that as well. And we'll reflect on Leicester City's march towards the Champions League, something those big six and the rest of the 12 that try to conspire to have a closed shop of European competition would have hated. So we'll get into that. But first off, right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/LeicesterPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's athletic.com/LeicesterPod. Now then, Matt, we were at Wembley looking forward to history being made, and it was made. But I mean, you must have heard as well, as we were making our way down Wembley Way, so to speak, without any fans. Well, there was a few fans, we'll talk about that. But this European Super League concept came up, and by the time we got back, it all pleased as punch to see Leicester City get to the FA Cup final. Then the announcement was made that 12 clubs were breaking away, 6 from the Premier League, and it was going to be a closed shop, and all hell has broken loose this week since. And even though it's been the 6 English clubs that have bore the brunt of it, it's affected every club, because every press conference has been dominated with questions about it. For a while, we thought, is this going to happen, and is this going to kill the dream? Because this is the thing, and I wrote a piece about how this is an affront to what Leicester City have have achieved, you know, that dream. They've been living the dream, winning the Premier League 2016, playing the Champions League, getting to the quarterfinals. This was a club that, you know, come up from League One over a very short period of time. The likes of Jamie Vardy from non-league. It's a fantastic fairy tale, and this would have killed it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it was scary, I suppose, to some degree at the time. But I have to be honest, when I first heard it, I thought it was almost like an April Fool's joke. And I thought, hang on, what's going on? You can't just throw this in out of the blue. Obviously, it's not something that's been discussed just overnight. It's been going on for God knows how long behind the scenes from the big players, if you like. But it was all kept under wraps, wasn't it? You know, supposedly managers and even chief execs of certain clubs were unaware of the situation developing and arising. And all of a sudden, bang, it was came out of the blue like a sledgehammer, didn't it? And people were genuinely concerned and worried. And but personally, I must admit, perhaps I'm being a bit naive, but I thought it all sounded like pie in the sky to me. I thought, you know, you can't just land this on people sort of back end of one season. And when was it meant to come into operation?
Said as soon as possible, didn't they? I mean, that could have been next season, but more than likely the following season. But what got me, and I spoke to people around Leicester City around that time, and one of the reasons why, yes, they were concerned about it, but they're also a bit sceptical about it because they were thinking, well, if there's such massive opposition to it, where are they going to get the other clubs? I mean, they were talking about the 12 and another three coming in, which we all thought were going to be PSG, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. They quickly backed away from it, went, no, not for us. And then they wanted another five that were going to come in and be, I don't know how they were going to do this, but they were going to have five that were going to be there on merit. The others couldn't get relegated from it, but those five could. Where were they going to get those five? I mean, I know they were talking a massive amount of money going into this competition, but again, how was that sustainable? Where was that money coming from? There were so many questions unanswered, and I think initially Leicester just looked back at it and thought, well, let's just wait and see what they say here, because this could all be just the pie in the sky stuff and no need to get too worried about it. And that's one of the reasons why I think they didn't issue a statement condemning it until I think it was like 6 p.m. on the night, Tuesday night, when it all went belly up anyway. So I think Leicester were very much, you know, let's just be restrained and we're not going to go public and say too much about it. But they were involved in the meeting with the 14 clubs that would have been effectively left behind in the Premier League. And I'm sure Susan Whelan would have had a say in that. But I think they left it to others to lead the protest. Certainly Everton were very, very strong in their statement. And the owner of Crystal Palace came out on telly as well, speaking Brighton as well, spoke publicly. But that's not really Leicester's way. So they sat back and watched. But you're right, Matt, it just seemed a little bit surreal, didn't it, really? Where you thought, well, there's loads of questions here that are not answered. It doesn't seem feasible.
No, exactly. And it was amateurishly handled, you know, in how it was just dumped on people. It was dismissive in many ways, but also in how it was put across. Talk of arrogance. It's back end of a season where people are challenging at that very time for the FA Cup, but also, you know, ongoingly, the Premier League, the Champions League, Europa League, etc. And then that is just dropped in as a bombshell. For total disregard for everyone's sentiments and feelings. And it just struck me as weird, really, and not believable. Because for 1,001 reasons, I can't see why it would work. It's certainly in that format that they were implying that everyone had signed up to. Like they're saying about, without prolonging the point now, but they're saying about, oh, money needs to be created because of the money that's been lost due to the COVID situation primarily. Listen, maybe clubs have just got to cut their cloth accordingly more so in the future. And so, or now, for instance, you know, if there was a general proposition for players to, I don't know, at the top end of the game, earn £200,000 rather than £250,000 a week, you know, I don't think there would be too much comeback from that if it was in the short term. You know, everyone's got to make adjustments. And there's enough money in the game.
Well, it's all about money, isn't it? I mean, these clubs, they are the richest clubs in the world in terms of their revenue. But how rich are they when you've got, £1 billion worth of debt? Are you that rich? Because I think inevitably one day we're going to have these clubs all link up at one stage. But it's put the power back into fans' hands now in many ways, because they've got the government on board. And I don't really like government getting involved in football, but in this sense, if it turns around that fans have got more representation of football clubs, more of a say in the running of their football club, so they're not like Sainsbury's. I've seen that, heard that analogy so many times, you know, about customers. They're just customers. They're not. They're more than that. You know, football clubs are part of their community. They can't just move. They shouldn't just move. I know that's an American concept, and a lot of this is an American concept, without relegation and that. But if fans now will have an increased say and more power around their club, that can only be a positive that's come out of what has been a very dark negative.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if that solution is feasible, then it definitely needs to be explored, doesn't it? Because, you know, from my view, as you see it, the owners, you know, there's some people saying that, you know, they're just custodians of the club in their time. Perhaps morally, yeah, but legally, they're not.
No, you know, they're only lock, stock and barrel.
Yeah, they're so powerful, and they see it as a, you know, an entity, don't they? And certainly some of the international, you know, owners, stroke investors within the club, they see it primarily, well, not primarily, solely as a business. And that's worrying. That's worrying because you're always, you know, at their behest, really. What they decide to do determines the future of your club. You know, what's to stop some of them just up in and selling to, you know, for whatever reason, if they were in need of some quick money on a different scale, you know, they might sell the club to the wrong people, etc., without too much care and attention.
That's anything's happened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's happened at various clubs.
Exactly, because, you know, Leicester City are very fortunate. They have some conscientious owners and have done for the last few years. But the club is, you know, so grateful and thankful to them, and they put their trust in that ownership. But that's not the case with every club, and it's worrying that the power that they do possess. And again, that's something else that needs to be looked at in terms of how clubs are owned and run, and how much liability the owners get, and how much leeway they have, because they're, you know, very precarious situations at times. It's okay in the here and now when the money's there, but that money can soon disappear and the club can be left in ruins.
Hello listeners, sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
And it's that Leicester model that is at the heart of many of this, because it was widely quoted. A Premier League executive spoke to a national newspaper a few years back after Leicester City's title win in 2016 and said, "We don't want any more Leicester Cities." You know, and the fact that the Leicester are still up there challenging these elite. I mean, there's only Man United and Man City, the big six, that are ahead of Leicester in the Premier League, and they're inching closer to reaching the Champions League, which would have been a locked door to them under this, potentially under this Super League project that they dreamed up. And the reason why they're edging closer is because they came up with another fantastic performance last night, I thought. Admittedly, against a very poor West Brom side. I mean, their front line was absent. It was just comical at times, West Brom. But Leicester put them to the sword emphatically in the first half, even though Brendan Rodgers was incensed with some of the sloppy passing and even gave the water bottles a good belting at one stage. And I've not seen him that animated on the touchline because his side was 3-0 up at the time. But he really wanted them to put them to the sword in the first half. But that was an impressive performance. And if you look at it, Vardy scoring his first goal after an 11-game drought. Iheanacho scoring his 12th goal in 11 games. Johnny Evans scoring his first goal since 2019, I believe. But that's four games that back three of Evans, Soyuncu and Fofana have played together. And they've kept three clean sheets and only conceded one goal. And Leicester won the lot. You know, it's all building now, in contrast to last season, towards a really exciting finish to this season.
Yeah, pretty comprehensive, wasn't it, against West Brom. There's a different feel, isn't there, this campaign, without a doubt. And, you know, I've mentioned it a few times this season, that the depth of the squad is there. The belief within the camp is growing in confidence. And they've got more durability and flexibility about their play for me. Last season, I thought, when they were at their best, the first half of the season, you know, that they were almost unstoppable at times. And that was as good as I've seen a Leicester City side play. But when all of a sudden, you know, that not ground to a halt, but came up against a bit of a buffer, there wasn't the alternative. And there's a little bit one-dimensional, really. But now they've developed their game. They can sit back and be solid defensively, as we see now with that back three that's intimidating, really, you know, with those three centre-halves. For centre-forward opponents going up against them, it's a dreadful prospect. But then they can go and dominate games, you know, with possession. They can go and squeeze the opposition. They can play good short, sharp, interchange passes. They've got so much variation to their play, and I think they've got too much substance to let things slip this time round. Still some work to be done, of course, but...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, already it's an historic season. I mean, Leicester got 59 points from their 32 Premier League games this season. In their top flight history, only in 1963, adjusting to the 3 points for a win, and in 2015-16, the title-winning season, when they got 69 and 63 and 63. Have they had a better tally from their opening 32 matches to a campaign? It's all building towards what could be really... and very memorable season. And it was great yesterday, I thought, to see Jamie Vardy getting a little bit back towards his best. I mean, he's starting to really be a fantastic assist provider as well. But to get his goal as well, only Harry Kane and Sergio Aguero have been directly involved in more goals in the Premier League than Leicester strikers. He's got 116 goals and 37 assists in his 153 Premier League appearances. I mean, that's a phenomenal record.
Yeah, it's not a bad little stat to mention, is it? From Jamie's point of view, there's so many records that he's broken, so many achievements that he's made, and there's another one there. You know, if anyone needed a reminder of what a player he has been and still is for Leicester City, they don't need to look any further than that, do they? You know, that's the company that he's mixing with, and despite his relative goal drought of late, there were never any really serious concerns that he's not going to get back on the trail at some stage. Excellent finish last night. Excellent contribution all round again from him. You're seeing different dimensions to his game now. He's playing a slightly different role. We can go, rather than be that lone striker and at times be isolated and just rely upon chances being created for him, he's actually getting involved in the mix and is supplying more than he's actually converting. So, he's still got a little way to go, I think, you know, in front of goal. He has been a bit off his normal levels. You know, I think that's fair to say, but his contribution has still been invaluable, hasn't it? And just ask Kelechi Iheanacho about that. But, Leicester looked real class outfit last night. There were big performances throughout. I mean, the back three you mentioned, imperious, really, although it was a stroll in the park for them, quite honestly. But I thought Tielemans was stroking the ball about beautifully, you know, the supply chain for the front men, and Didi was just bossing everything, and Maddison came back like he'd never really been away. He was strutting around, running play as well. The link up between Tielemans and Maddison was really impressive, and then onto the front too. You know, Leicester looked a quality outfit And the wing backs, you know, I've got to give them a mention as well.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Matt, because I've done my match piece on the fullback situation at the club, because we've seen in recent games Castagna and Pereira are being used as the two wing backs, both of them predominantly right footed. Both of them have been switched over and played on the left. I mean, at Wembley, it was Ricky P that played on the left and Castagna on the right. And we asked Brendan about it, and he said, you know, he likes to play players in their preferred position, and both of them prefer to play the right. Well, it begs the question, who's going to play on the left? And young Luke Thomas was given that opportunity against West Bromwich Albion. And yeah, I thought he did very well, but he's still very young and he's still got a lot to learn. He probably could benefit from experience of 40, 50 game season out on loan somewhere. And with James Justin, we know, well, he's not going to be back until at least November. And then it's going to, as we've seen with Ricky P, it's going to take him a bit longer to get fit again, to get back towards his best. And we won't see Ricky P back to his best until next season. And with Christian Fuchs out of contract as well at the end of this season, it looks like Leicester are definitely going to be in the market for a left back this summer. Now, the money's going to be tight, obviously with the pandemic, 6-7 million loss, but they will still try and support Brendan, and he's going to look to bring in 4 or 5, I think, to try and strengthen, especially if they've got Champions League. But he's going to have to be very careful about how he recruits. Now, we've done the piece trying to look at some of the possible targets around Europe that would fit that bill. One of them that's come up is somebody he's worked with at Chelsea, is out of contract at Southampton, Ryan Bertrand. Whether he would go for a player that's 31, you know, that would go against really the club's recruitment philosophy. But in the short term, with if Thomas went out on loan and got some experience, and they're just holding down the fort for him to develop and JJ to get back to his best, that might be a solution. But I wonder what you thought of that situation at the moment.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, really, isn't it? Because it's almost an embarrassment of riches Leicester have got in some ways. You know, when James Justin is back, I mean, he's predominantly right-sided.
He is.
Isn't he? As yeah. is Pereira, as is Castagna. But we know about the versatility of Justin in particular and the two other players mentioned. But I think Luke Thomas is... It's a difficult one. I take your point there about him going out on loan. He probably would benefit from that, but he'll probably think, I'm past going out on loan now. You know, I'm sort of
yeah,
semi...
Might be thinking that.
I know it's a bit stop-start for him, but semi-established, maybe that's not the right terminology, but you know, he'll feel that he's grown enough and he's competent enough to go in and play a run of games at Premier League level, if necessary. Now, Brendan Rodgers might have a different view on that. I think maybe going on loan somewhere, but not necessarily for a whole season. You know, it seems a little bit too long away from the club, because Luke Thomas, as we saw last night, we've seen numerous times, he can just slot in there. And he's naturally left-sided and he blends in well. And it, you know, he's got so many attributes. There's still a lot to learn, as you say, but very rarely does he let people down. But, yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, no one really envisaged Ricardo being effectively dropped, stroke rested. Well, you know, a couple of months after he's coming back from injury, we know it's difficult and he's had a few little niggles, but he hasn't got back into his full flow, that's for sure. And I thought he looked more uncomfortable on the left-hand side than Castagna did. And Brendan Rodgers talked about a lack of penetration when Castagna's on the left-hand side.
Checking back all the time as well.
Yeah.
They want to go on the right foot, don't they? But
it's not like the only thing I would say, it's not like Castagna whips in cross after cross after cross. You know, he makes some great runs forward. And I don't know why he can't make those runs. Like, he's done an underlap sometimes or, you know, little give and goes. Why he can't do that on the left-hand side. And perhaps, you know, he doesn't swing in crosses like Albrighton does too often, does he? But, you know, obviously more comfortable on the right. It's an area to be looked at, but I mean, how many top-class full-backstroke wing-backs do you want in one squad? I suppose it's just balancing things up a touch, isn't it?
that's the word, isn't it? Balance. Whether he wants, I mean, because he has spoken, Brendan has spoken about having that balance, and Luke Thomas does provide that balance with his natural left foot, his ability to go out and put crosses into the box. We didn't see it a lot against West Bromwich Albion. I mean, he's only made 21 appearances, and I think he is the future for them going forward. It's whether they want to put that burden on him of playing 30, 40 games next season at left back. But as you say, Castagna, Pereira, they could probably still fill in, but whether you want to go to the next level, whether you need a specialist in there.
The quality does need improvement if they're going to compete to some level, hopefully, in the Champions League and, you know, the top end of the Premier League, etc., you know, to sustain that constant development. And the club needs to show that to keep infusing Brendan Rodgers as well. Because, you know, he's dropped that in a couple of times in statements, hasn't he? I'm happy at Leicester. You know, we're developing, we're progressing. As long as I see that, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
So Leicester can't afford to stagnate at all.
Absolutely. And part of that progression is reaching an FA Cup final for the first time in 52 years. What an amazing experience that was. I know it was overshadowed by what events elsewhere, but in terms of the national media, and it didn't get highlighted as much. But to us locals, it's an amazing achievement. I did a piece with Gary Lineker previewing the game, looking back at the 82 game against Spurs that they lost the last time they got to a semi-final, to finally get over the line into a final now, and Brendan said it after the game, they've got to go and win it. You know, you don't be satisfied with that. You go on and win it. What's it going to be like for the players now in the build-up to a cup final? Because you were captain of the last team that lifted a trophy at Wembley. Does it overshadow everything? Is it a distraction? Is it hard to focus on the league programme when you've got that showcase event coming up?
No, I don't think so. From memory, the best that I can drag back from all that time ago, if anything, it served as a boost, really, and you know it improved, you know, our confidence, and obviously we were in high spirits. You know, the excitement of qualifying for, you know, a major cup final was something that motivated you and inspired you, didn't distract you. You know, we went bouncing into league games because all of a sudden we were sort of under the impression that, you know, we must be a good side. We've got to a cup final at Wembley. You know, we've got through so many stages. We've come through different scrapes and situations, and that gave us an extra confidence in the league. And you don't go into games thinking, oh, I'll just take it easy today, and I don't want to risk doing too much wrong, or won't go into this challenge in case I get hurt. You know, you start playing like that, then it affects your rhythm, it affects your form individually, and then as a team, and then you end up going into the final with a bit of negativity. And Leicester can't afford that for a number of reasons. You know, primarily because they need to continue winning games to keep themselves where they are in the Premier League. And that's why I thought it was really impressive against West Brom, you know, to have the high of winning the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley, albeit with no fans. And then after high, there's often a low, but Leicester didn't allow that to happen and went into the game superbly. It can give you that extra edge, if anything. You know, sometimes the players are that little bit more determined to maybe go and impress, try and get in the final team. But I think Premier League games are incentive enough in their own isolation, really, because, you know, each week the competition for places is so severe, isn't it, within a squad of Leicester's size and quality, that you need to perform week in, week out, game in, game out. And there'll be no letting up, no respite from Leicester's point of view. And achieving things as a group was rightly celebrated by Brendan Rodgers, but he's also right to accentuate the point of, you know, okay, we've worked very hard to get here, but the main work is still yet to be done. Let's go and maximise the opportunity we've got coming our way by winning the final, not just appearing in it.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this.
Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F.
Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
What do you think their chances are of doing that, of achieving that, and being the first Leicester team to ever lift the FA Cup? They're up against Chelsea. They've had a transformation there under Tuchel. They're a lot more resolute, defensively a lot stronger. They've got some good attacking talent as well, although I think they really miss that out-and-out centre-forward that Leicester have got in Jamie Vardy. But I think that's going to be a great game. I really do think that's going to be a classic final.
Listen, Leicester have got every chance. In external media and people's eyes, naturally, they tend to lean towards Chelsea because, I don't know, the glamour that's associated with them, the competitions that they won over recent times. And, I suppose they've got that top-level experience within the ranks, but Leicester's players, are of a very, very high standard themselves and pretty experienced as well individually when you look across the board. And I think it's pretty much 50-50 in my view. Leicester have got as good a chance as Chelsea. They've beaten Chelsea this year, okay, different setup, slightly different manager, different mentality maybe. But they're not infallible, Chelsea. They do look impressive. They're very well structured. As are Leicester, and it could be a very tactical battle with individualism sort of sprinkled throughout, and who can produce those key moments. But Leicester are above Chelsea in the league. Some people need reminding of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a freakish result early in the season. They're doing it consistently and looking good to remain above Chelsea. Still some work to do. So, listen, Leicester can be very confident of getting success. What an achievement it would be as well, wouldn't it? And what a glorious way to achieve that success by turning over Chelsea. But looking forward to finding out one way or another, that's for sure.
Absolutely. It's going to be a really enthralling, exciting end to the season for Leicester City. Champions League is in their grasp if they can just keep this going with some big games coming up against Crystal Palace, Southampton, Newcastle, Man United, Chelsea and Tottenham. And then the FA Cup. Stay with The Athletic. Stay with 5,000 as well, as we take you through what could be a fantastic end to the season for Leicester City. Matt, thank you very much for your time again today.
Pleasure, mate. Look forward to seeing you soon. See you there on Monday night, yeah?
Absolutely. And we'll hear from you again, guys, soon when you join us again on 5,000 to 1.
The Athletic.